Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
That is Ronaldo. Honestly, that drone's so bad. Is that Barack Obama on the back of your t-shirt? Episode 254 of 20 Minute Tim's. This is the flagship edition, and I am joined, as always, by Stephen.
Hello.
And Melly.
Yes.
And I'm your host, Jamie. And guys, we have came into week 6 of the Celtic manager hunt. Still no managers in place. We've got conflicting reports already about Eddie Howe's intentions. Essentially, they all add up to the same thing, though. Celtic don't have a manager. Eddie Howe's obviously still in the frame. He is the bookie's favourite. He's the centre of reports. We've had chat in the papers about him having a private meeting with Dermot Desmond and Peter Law. But it depends really who you listen to. The jungle drums are beaten. Guys, there's some word on the street. One, the little angel on my shoulder has been telling us things in this podcast along the lines of, look, it's all fine. Celtic are confident they're going to land their man. There's a few wee niggles to work out. And those niggles revolve around the director of football position. That's what I've heard. There are other people, the little devil on my shoulder, has said to me, look, Eddie Howe's agent has been really cute here. Yes, they've met Celtic, but the deal is nowhere near close. In fact, there's a suspicion that he's wanting employment going into the summer. He wants to be in a managerial position at the beginning of next season. And what his agent is doing is maybe using Celtic to smoke out other offers to say, look, this guy's hot property and he'll be gone soon if you don't get your finger out and offer him a contract, Crystal Palace. Should Celtic be moving on from this situation, Stephen? Because we've got a lot of work to get on with.
Oh, there sure is. There's an awful lot of work to be done between now and the beginning of next season, which is probably just around the corner. You know what these are like? They seem to be getting earlier and earlier every season, The qualifiers and all that. Moving on, I'm not quite at that stage yet. I wouldn't say I'm worried about it, but I'm mildly concerned that there doesn't seem to be any movement on this whatsoever. Not just that, because it's not like it has gone from rumour and has stayed at rumour the entire time and we're all just kind of getting a wee bit fed up with it. We've gone from a period of it being almost a done deal about 2 weeks ago, it feels like now, only for nothing to happen. So there was an awful lot of smoke around for there to be no fire, but nothing's happened. So I'm a wee bit kind of mildly concerned that things aren't moving as quickly as I'd like them to. I do appreciate that these things do take time. They're not as quickly as we'd like them to be, and it's not just a case of pressing a button and Eddie Howe will be announced as the new manager. Even Neil Lennon didn't accept the job he was offered at first. He went away on holiday. Remember, he came back and accepted it. So even that, the guy didn't want. He even took longer than it should have done. So I appreciate that, you know, these things do take time. We're all in a bit of a bind here, though, because I feel like, say, put ourselves back 2 weeks ago, and it had maybe been Enzo Maresca, who's another name that's been hotly linked with it. Say it had been Enzo Maresca who'd been announced as almost a done deal. I think a lot of people, including myself, would have been like, right, okay, I'm on board with that. Would have preferred Eddie Howe, but I can get on board with that. The trouble is, I was on this podcast just a week ago saying Eddie Howe is the number one guy. He's the best appointment we could possibly make because I don't want to hear about Rafa Benitez. If we now get to the point where Eddie Howe isn't going to be the manager, everything else is going to be a bit of a climb down from that, and that's not a good foot to be starting off with as a Celtic manager. As Neil Lennon just found out, when he wasn't everyone's preference?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a difficult one for the Celtic board if Eddie Howe does turn the job down, Melly, because it's going to be clear that whoever they appoint isn't going to be their number one target, but they absolutely will come out and say this guy was our number one target all along. If I had a hunch here, I would suggest that the Eddie Howe ship has sailed. I don't think Eddie Howe's going to be Celtic manager. That's just based on what I'm hearing, but trying to make it clear at the beginning, I'm hearing a lot of different things. But if I had to hedge my bets based on who's telling me what, I would maybe, just as a punt for me, say that Eddie Howe's maybe not happening. The rumours appear to be that he's got a bit of an issue with how the not the backroom staff's going to be made up, but a bit of an issue with the club hierarchy, what the director of football is going to look like. I think it's pretty clear, as reported, he wants his own man in, Richard Hughes. I think Celtic have identified Fergal Harkin, and that seems to be a bit of a bone of contention. There's also a bit of contention about how much or how little certain historical figures at Celtic Park might be playing in the new regime, even though they've reportedly stepped down, and who's going to make up the shortfall, and blah, 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 how that's all going to look. And he just wants assurances over that. But I merely feel that Eddie Howe is probably not going to be the Celtic manager next season. Should Celtic make the decision, though? Should Celtic take control of this situation, as a lot of people are saying, and go, right, okay, Eddie, look, we've got a job to do. You think about it, but while you're thinking, we're going to keep looking.
I think they've done that anyway. It seems to be Celtic have spoken to a number of people and sounded out a number of people, but Eddie Howe maybe crept up as a number one choice. So I think Celtic will do that. I don't think they're putting their eggs all in the Eddie Howe basket, but I'm still quite hopeful he'll come. I think with these things, they do take time, and with Celtic having such a big change around with Dominic Mackay, he doesn't start till a week till today, so it would make sense maybe next week for the manager to be announced, or more movement on the manager front then once he's in the door, because you can't really announce it but then announce him a week later. So maybe that's one of the things. And one of the things I was thinking about is if Eddie Howe does want Richard Hughes in, Richard Hughes has currently got a job at Bournemouth where they are in the playoffs going for promotion right now. So are Bournemouth going to be easy to go, do you know what, just take our guy then out, we'll take that distraction where we are trying to get into the Premier League. They're either going to be in the Championship next year or be in the Premier League, so they'll be needing to prepare for that. So they'll be wanting to keep their man. So maybe that's one of the holdups. Maybe that's just me just hopeful it's going to be Eddie Howe because he is my number one choice.
If it was my shout, I'd probably go for Richard Hughes over Fergal Harkin anyway. I think Richard Hughes is more established in the director of football role. He'll have a track record, better contacts. Bournemouth's recruitment at the lower end of the price range was much better. So I think he's a strong contender for the role anyway.
I think Celtic need a long-term approach, but at the same time, if you get handed me Eddie Howe and his man or Fergal Harkin and his man, I'm picking Eddie Howe and his man every time.
But this is the question, I suppose. Should Eddie Howe be able to effectively pick his own boss, Stephen? A lot of people are looking at it like that. They would go, look, I want to come in, but I want to have the director of football as my guy.
Well, no, because that's potentially leaving Celtic back to square one if both of them up and leave in 2 years' time. That's what happened with Brendan Rodgers. He took everyone with him. So if he takes his guy with him, it leaves us having a very similar summer to what we're facing just now, where we're having to basically appoint everything in the one go. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but I said I was being a bit of a hypocrite with that because Eddie Howe is the guy I want, so I'm willing to kind of look past that. But the longer things take, the more I'm trying to be sensible about it. Don't get me wrong, if that's the environment that Eddie Howe needs to best to do his job at Celtic, then I suppose allowances might need to be made for that. But on the surface of it, no, it's not exactly an ideal proposal.
I mean, it is something I have seen a lot of online about this. I don't really mind, Stephen, I don't mind Eddie Howe picking his own boss because they need to work closely, they need to work together, and ultimately it won't be the director of football who sacks the manager. It'll probably be the CEO in any circumstance. You know, that decision will be made higher up, or the decision will become eminently obvious that the manager needs to go. So if Eddie Howe has a terrible job, he's not going to have to get his old best pal in his office. Sorry, Eddie, we have to go. It's the old team in the scrap heap, mate. He's not going to... It's not really how it's going to really pan out that way.
Well, Jamie, we've seen how it panned out this season, so I wouldn't be too sure of that.
Yeah, I suppose you want to try and avoid the old pals act a wee, but I just think I don't think it would necessarily harm Celtic to let Eddie Howe suggest a director of football and have him work with him. But as I said, I think the ship has sailed a wee bit for Eddie Howe.
Well, if Eddie Howe can demonstrate to the Celtic board and the incoming CEO that is a good appointment, then fine. That's absolutely fine. Like as long as everyone agrees upon it, as long as he's not at the point where he's foisting his own guy on the Celtic board, But that doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be a case where Eddie Howe strongly suggests this guy. They look into him, bring him in, and that's absolutely fine. It doesn't have to be, oh, well, we want our guy, so we're unwilling to listen. It's a brand new role, so it's not like he's replacing anyone. So I'd be up for that. I mean, if Eddie Howe needs his own guy, then yes, I think I'm on board with it. However, there's no getting away from it. It's not ideal. I don't think it's ideal, Eddie Howe bringing his own guy in. And the way it should work is that Celtic appoint that guy, and then he works with Eddie Howe. But neither is happening at the moment. We're merely speculating.
I'm still hopeful that Eddie Howe will get in, but I'm still hopeful that Celtic can get the best of both worlds here as well. Richard Hughes is a sort of head of recruitment, and Celtic could really do with that right now, and I think they could do a director of football as well. There's plenty of teams out there. I spoke about Man United the last week or whenever. They've just got a sort of sporting director and a head of football operations, so there's ways around it. And even like teams like Leicester, they've got Lee Congerton and they've got a head of recruitment as well, so they could get both in if Eddie Howe is willing to work under that. It's one of these things where you don't know until everybody's in place.
It's funny you were saying, Melly. Mm. I hear what you're saying. Bring in Lee Congerton is the message to take away from that.
It's funny. It's interesting what you're saying about Leicester, because I was reading that Brendan Rodgers actually attributed a lot of the success he has and is having at Leicester to the fact that he got in early, the fact that he got in before that transfer window and had a right good look at his squad. And I think that's something else that Celtic maybe need to be looking to. If Eddie Howe's saying, look, I don't want to start a job into the summer, back to the conversation, the argument we had a couple of weeks ago, the more I think about it, I'm like, even though the summer's fast approaching, I don't think it would necessarily harm Eddie Howe or any manager to come in next week and have a right good look at this squad. And it gives them an opportunity to decide. Because if you think, if someone comes in, they might not be inclined to keep a Laxalt, you know, in the summer. Do you want to get that guy Laxalt back? But maybe after a couple of weeks looking at him, they think, do you know what? I can really work with Laxalt. The scouting reports you're giving me, compared to what I'm actually seeing on the training field every week, suggests to me that I could maybe work with this guy. And I think the time is a ticking a wee bit. And I know Eddie Howe has said that he doesn't want to start to the summer. Again, this is something I think maybe might not be the strongest approach.
I disagree with that. I don't think many managers are going to get much benefit from working with these players. The amount of turnover there's going to be in the summer, what's he going to get from working with Laxalt, Kenny, Brown, Edward, Ayer? Pretty much nothing, because they're all going to be away. And
what about the ones that are here? What about the ones that are here? He might say, look, I've got James Forrest, but he doesn't fit in the way I want to play. Or I've got Greg Taylor, I'm going to need a new left back. Or it could be vice versa. It could be Greg Taylor moves on and the manager comes in and Greg Taylor's away in 2 weeks and goes, I actually quite like that guy. I wish he was, you know, there's no harm in having a manager or the new manager working with the current squad to see what he does. And what if the manager goes and, you know, there's a bit of indecision about what they want to do with the likes of Laxalt or Ayer's got a contract on the table, but he's waiting to see who the manager is. And the guy goes, look, I want to work with this guy, Ayer. Can we maybe push the boat out a wee bit and make sure we keep him? I think there is a lot of benefits to getting a guy in just now. And I don't think just because some players are leaving, it negates the whole experiment.
It does negate the whole experiment, but there's only a month left of the league season and 5 weeks if we get to the Scottish Cup final. So has there ever been a manager that's came in with a month left in the season and thought, do you know what, I'm going to get everything started? It just doesn't happen. And I don't see the benefits of getting a style in place and teaching players how to play a certain way and then 9-10 of them go and you need to start again. I don't think any high level manager is going to want to come into that. He'll be able to watch games, he'll be able to get reports and all the stuff he needs to know for me.
Yeah, no, but I
remember when Brendan Rodgers came in, he pretended he'd watched every single goal from the previous two seasons or something like that.
He probably did. He probably did. Brendan Rodgers is the example I bring up, because Eddie Howe
came in February, but
I know, but what I'm saying is there's benefits to an early start. And if Eddie Howe's saying, well, I don't want to start early under any circumstances, I would maybe be looking at him going, really? Do you hold it that in such high regard, this summer start?
It's on the 1st of June, but it's like a week after the season finishes. It's not a big deal for me.
The reason I bring up Brendan Rodgers is because I'm not using the example of him going to Leicester, because he did do that early, but he came to Celtic and he was fully prepared anyway. He came into Celtic saying that he'd watched a load of film on the previous couple of seasons and was prepared to take over the team. I think there's ways and means. While it might not be as practical as being on the training ground with them, I think there's plenty of ways and plenty of info you can gather on players that you don't have to actually take the job. I really don't see the point in him taking on the job at the moment just to see what the players are like in person and then going through a series of meaningless games. or potentially coming in the day after a game against Rangers, and we've got a cup to play out. I'm not desperate for anyone to come in at this moment. It would have been ideal months ago, but at this point, I think the kind of horse has bolted on that, and we're in the situation we're in, ideally or not, far from it, but I think we just need to kind of wait. And
the horse has bolted, you're right, and we aren't in dire need of a manager. But there's no real clamour because GFK is in the dugout. Do you know what the F in GFK stands for? John Kennedy's middle name? Physique. You seen the guns on the boy? John Physique Kennedy, that's what GFK means. Jesus Christ, man. He's doing a decent job. In fact, he's doing better than a decent job. He's just highest scoring win of the domestic season.
Yeah, Saturday was great. It was like watching Celtic from past times. I enjoyed watching the game. I was sitting there, this is good. This is good. We won 6-0, but I don't like when people say it could have been 6-7-8-9 because it doesn't really work with that. But genuinely, it could have been an absolute pasting Livingston took, apart from their goalkeeper was their best player. He made a string of cracking saves. And do you know what? It was 6-0, but it wasn't one of those 6-0 where you think, oh, just better players and Livingston collapsed. Celtic played really well. They played great football and it was so enjoyable to watch. They looked like... It's sort of been coming with the Celtic under Kennedy. They look like they're going to blow a team away. Maybe thought it would be Falkirk last week, but this week, Livingston, I was delighted to see it because it looked like Celtic knew what they were doing.
Celtic, to me, Stephen, at the weekend, they look like a team that are back enjoying training, back enjoying playing football. Yeah. They look as if they much prefer playing in this 4-2-3-1. James Ford, everything just looks a lot more positive. It's almost, I know this is very, very premature, but I'm going to say it anyway, because you know some of my pronouncements on this podcast have been absolute dog water, so this is going to be no difference. It's almost like the last 9 months didn't happen watching that Celtic team. That was like watching Celtic from the tail end of last season.
Yeah, yeah, and things like the words both of you are using just now, like enjoyment and positive, like and dog water, yeah. These words are quite important when talking, or are key when talking about this performance, because for a change, it was actually quite fun to watch. It was quite enjoyable to sit down and watch a Celtic game. And yes, I take on board that it's not all that meaningful in the grand scheme of things, but really, in a season like this, that's all we're after here, is just to not dread sitting down to watch a Celtic game. And that's exactly what we got. It was a thoroughly decent afternoon's work, I thought, against Livingston. Very enjoyable indeed. Let's not forget, Livingston, yes, they're not the greatest team in the world, and they can be a bit, well, very brutal to watch at times, but massive bogey team for Celtic in the last 3 years. Yeah. That's now 10 times we've played them in the last 3 years. We've only beat them 4 times, including that of the weekend. So we've not been in the greatest of form against them for quite some time, and they've taken some points off Celtic. So to go there and just pretty much sweep them aside wasn't nothing. And you saw how annoyed David Martindale was, away on the side of the pitch. And he, after the game, he described it as the worst performance he's seen in his 7 years at the football club. You know somebody's annoyed when they describe it as the football club as well. So he was annoyed with that. So it's been a Livingston team who have managed to get into the top six this season, 6-0. That's not to be sneezed at, as they say. It was a very good performance and very entertaining along with it. And how many times can you honestly say that for this season?
I know. It was really, really enjoyed it. It was a fun performance. Maybe the F and John Kennedy stands for fun. Maybe fun is his middle name, really.
Funzo?
Funzo Kennedy, jeez.
No, not Funzo Kennedy.
It was good. Look, Funzo's really... He's got a plan going into the game, doesn't he? It doesn't look like Celtic were earlier in the season. I mean, you spoke about it on the match reaction, Jamie. Celtic aren't passive. There's players making runs off. There's players breaking lines. There's not a player on the pitch you could say, oh, he was poor today, or he didn't look like he knew what he was doing. Everybody seemed to know what they're doing. And the most pleasing aspect of it for me was when we get into that final third, we look like we know what we're trying to do. There's bits and pieces where you say, oh, I can see why that didn't work. There was one where Greg Taylor got to the byline and cut it back for Cal McGregor coming in, but the space was opened up for Cal McGregor because Odson Edward stretched the game and went right into the 6-yard box. Now, previous to that, maybe Odson Edward drops off and tries to get involved in a bit more play, but it looked like all the players knew what they were doing, knew where they should be when scenario A happens, when scenario B happens, and Celtic just ripped them apart. The amount of passes that took a player out, or El Yunusi makes a run beyond, it opens up space for somebody else, or somebody makes a run and Cal McGregor goes into the space. It was great to watch.
Melly, I prefer this 4-2-3-1 that we've been playing. I think the Diamond was getting a wee bit tired. I think that front four, kind of with Turnbull and Forrest and Ailey and Usai and Odson-Edouard, are really, really dangerous. I thought a lot of the transitions were a lot quicker, a lot sharper. There was a lot more running off the ball, I noticed, in this game as well.
Yeah, it's the four best players you'd pick. If everybody was available, they'd be the four you'd pick, and they're all playing in their preferred positions. And James Forrest being back, it does really give the team more balance. The diamond, it works to a point, but if you don't have flying fullbacks, which we don't, you sort of lose a bit of width. But with this, it gives us the more balance because James Forrest provides the width. Ailey Nussey gets into dangerous positions. Odson-Edouard might be look a bit better with a partner sometimes, so maybe when Ailey Nussey is close to him, it helps him out. And David Turnbull in that number 10, really, that's his best position. So I can see why everybody just felt more natural. And look, the team just looked as if they knew what they're doing, making space for each other, making runs off the ball, and we ripped them apart. And look, Livingston, as Stephen said, they're a bogey team for us, but you don't ever hear of Livingston getting absolutely pumped. They're a decent team, they're stodgy, they try and keep things tight, but Celtic absolutely destroyed them, and it was amazing. It's just, it feels like the season started, we beat Hamilton 5-1, and now we've got this 6-0 game, and you go, what the hell happened in the middle there that Celtic have been so bad?
I know, I was trying to think about if this was the best performance of the season. I was like, oh, so many. So many to choose from. What were they again? Hibs was all right about 6 months ago, and then it was just a blur, just a grey, sludgy blur.
You could have that 20 minutes against AC Milan, or you could have the Lille game, I suppose.
Oh, yeah,
you
could maybe have that.
I think it's probably a toss-up between this and Lille, really, the two games, but they are so far apart. I think over his tenure, has John Kennedy's team, Celtic team, been better than Neil Lennon's Celtic team? If you just look at their 100% of the time, I know John Kennedy's played far less games, so he's had fewer opportunities to get willied. But just looking at how he's... But if you look at what John Kennedy took over, I know people are going to get their hackles up going, oh, Jamie wants John Kennedy to be the Celtic manager, blah, blah, blah. I've not decided on that yet, but all I'm saying is, if you look at what John Kennedy took over, how low this team have been, how badly they were performing, how what the atmosphere must have been like behind the scenes, to get them performing to that standard that we saw against Livy the other day, it's all been incremental improvements. It's been like the work's been, you could sort of tell that the work on the training ground has been put in. It's been repetition, 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 back to doing what they used to do, reminding them that we're a winning team, and it kind of all seemed to come together. In that Livingston game, I think he's doing a really good job. I honestly couldn't really ask much more for John Kennedy. He's an assistant manager who's come in to stand in after the absolute disaster that's already unfolded.
He steadied the ship, and it's a saying we hate because it always reminds us of Rangers want Walter in, but he has done that, and it's not anything mind-blowing that he's done. He's just maybe reminded the players that they are good players, got them doing what they should be doing, because we've seen so many times it just looked like everybody was out playing for themselves, whereas it's sort of scaled back now, and Celtic are controlling games more, and we've got the better players, so that should be it. Celtic should be looking to control games and make incisive passes, make incisive runs when they're there. Not just everybody out for themselves, like Ryan Christie doing what he wants, Odson-Edouard doing what he wants. Clear instructions, and it's starting to show on the pitch, because, yes, he's only had 5 games, one against Rangers, but we should have won that. We've only conceded one goal, and we don't look like we're going to concede a lot of goals in these games. It's a small sample size, yes, but Celtic look like they've got a plan. They look like they're going to control games, and it's much better. The defensive frailties haven't been there as much. We've had one against Rangers, but that was just somebody letting a man go. In other games, we don't look like conceding goals, and that is a massive upgrade on the start of the season.
Yeah, it is massive to not be conceding these goals, because yes, you said there is a small sample size, but the problem is, prior to John Kennedy taking over, the likelihood in every single game was that we were going to concede at least one goal, at least one, maybe two. I would never have backed Celtic to have any clean sheets between now and the rest of the season. So to take that team that was a disaster all season and make them all right, admittedly, the pressure is somewhat off, right? I know that. I know there's nothing left to play for in the league. Although, clinch second in this game, guys. Ooh, that's something to celebrate. Did clinch the old second, so we're definitely going to be in the Champions League qualifier.
So what have we cut that gap down to now? Is it just the 20 points, aye?
Yep, and ever closer. Oh, wow. 20 it was a couple of weeks ago, and we're right on their coattails at 20.
Breathing down their necks.
Even that goal difference right down.
That's it. I gave John Kennedy credit recently for the fact that he was just dealing with what he had to work with. There's no way, if he was given his own management job, his first thought would be, I'm going to play a 4-4-2 diamond with James Forrest up front or Moe Winusi up front or anything like that. There's no way in better circumstances he would choose to do that. So I gave him credit for at least being able to cobble that together and work with what he's got. It's the same stuff we were giving Neil Lennon credit for as well when he took over. The circumstances are somewhat similar. They both took over in February, and Neil Lennon got an awful lot of credit for being able to just get Celtic over the line. So, in a way, John Kennedy deserves credit for taking a terrible, terrible team and making them all right. Yeah. So, that might be all he's done, but it's something that has been achieved with this absolute disaster of a season. You're right, it's not like mind-blowing. We're not suddenly the greatest team in the world again. We're not the Invincibles again, but we, in recent weeks, have looked entertaining and relatively solid team to watch, and that's about all we can expect.
And it just goes to show you, John Kennedy might not be doing anything massively different from what Neil Lennon's doing. And I would love, you know, someone to put that question to him: what are you doing differently to what was done before? Because if the answer's not very much, then it just goes to show you that all you need to do is change your manager. You don't need to change an awful lot. You just need to augment the personalities involved to maybe put it a bit more politely. And if that's all that's happened, if all we've done is just take out one leader that wasn't working and installed another one who's using the same methods or very similar methods, then that to me tells its own story. Melly, what was your pick of the...
See, be honest, Jamie, I'm sorry to jump in there. See, before we move on, Jamie, that what you've described there, it's just football.
Yeah.
That's football. That's 100 years of football you've just described. That's what happens for whatever reason. And I'm not going to drag us back down that alley again, but for whatever reason, Celtic decide to buck everything that we know about managerial changes and stick with it, and that's what happened. Now we're seeing how it could have been, maybe. But what you've described, there is nothing revolutionary at all. It's just the case of taking out what is categorically not working and starting again. See other people at the time who said you can't get rid of Neil Lennon because it will just be a disaster, because we'll go off the rails and we won't even clinch second. It clearly wasn't the case. Mm. You know, a few weeks on and we're absolutely fine. We're totally fine.
Yeah, we're fine. So, you're right. Aye.
Yeah, that's it. So all the absolute catastrophes that everyone worries about from time to time, and I'm guilty of it as well. Every football fan is. That's part of
the game. You do need to weigh these things up. You know, you do need to weigh them up, because John Kennedy was an unknown quantity before he took the job on. It could have been a disaster. It just turns out that it's not been a disaster.
Yeah, yeah. But I think we, as football fans, just kind of worry about things like that a wee bit too much. I was thinking about this over the weekend there when West Ham won again and they beat Brendan Rodgers Leicester and they're still in the Champions League spots. Do you remember back then when we were talking about David Moyes for the job and everybody was like, no, that'll be a total disaster. He's obviously no good enough to manage. It's like sometimes we're guilty of being like, oh, not, we can't do that. It'll be a disaster. And then it clearly wouldn't have been. The guy's obviously a very good manager, but no, who's to know? Hindsight's 2020.
Well, let me ask you a question, right? I wasn't going to ask this in the podcast. We've kind of stumbled across something here that I've just been thinking about. It's not on the agenda for the podcast, but I've been thinking about it. I can get this on.
We've rambled down a dead end. We'll reverse out of it somehow.
This conversation cul-de-sac, no problem. Does Celtic need a David Moyes? Does Celtic need an Eddie Howe? Could Celtic, with a really competent, strong backroom staff, a team of excellent coaches, excellent data analysts, excellent people on the board and in the football operations department, does the head coach role need to be filled by a name? Could it be filled by someone who's qualified and experienced in football, but not necessarily been an head coach in his own right? Could John Kennedy, in theory, fill that role? Now, let's take the optics out of it. Let's take the PR out of it. Let's take the disaster that was this season out of it.
You would have to in order to discuss the point.
Say Neil Lennon won the league and retired, or Neil Lennon got another job, or any Celtic man, and John Kennedy came in and is performing the way he's performed. Could Celtic get by with a John Kennedy? And when I say get by, could Celtic excel with John Kennedy? Because this is... it could be an addition. Now, I know the fans are really against it and people don't want him anywhere near it, but what if he beats Rangers next week? What if he wins all the remaining games? What if he starts hammering teams 4-5-0? People are going to have to look at it and go, maybe we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
It depends who John Kennedy's getting the gig ahead of. If it's Eddie Howe or John Kennedy, it's going to be Eddie Howe. Yeah. If it's Maresca, maybe Maresca. If it's Roy Keane, it's definitely John Kennedy. So it depends who he's up against. And, well, he's not doing himself any harm here, but it's five games in. He's had one game against Rangers, which he possibly could have won. We'll need to give him the last, what is it, four games left in the league and possibly one or more in the cup. He's got two games at Ibrox, so it'll be a better sample size to judge him by after that, because those are the big games. And we've seen in John Kennedy, yes, he has got Celtic improved, but his in-game management has been poor sometimes as well. His substitutions have been baffling since he came in some of the games, the same as Neil Lennon. So I think you take away this season, yes, maybe John Kennedy gets the job, but you can't do that because as fans, we will remember, despite being fickle, we will remember these things. And if John Kennedy's given the job, it's only going to take one or two bad results for fans to completely turn on him. Now, what you're saying, Jamie, is about if we have everything in place, John Kennedy could be a good manager. The problem is we don't, and Celtic need to get that and then get John Kennedy.
Sorry, mate.
I don't think it'll work him going into that, but I think it would need to be Celtic need to get that, and then maybe after this manager, John Kennedy could take over. I don't think it's going to work right now because we need to get everything right.
I think you're doing what a lot of people do and focus too much on the order of appointments. You know, the decisions will have already been made about what this is going to look like in the next couple of weeks. It's just a case of getting the people, getting their contracts signed, getting them in place. They don't, like the CEO is already, Dominic Mackay's already designed. If they've decided that Eddie Howe's going to be the manager, if Eddie Howe can join today, but Dominic Mackay can't get out of his job until 2 weeks' time, you don't delay Eddie Howe, you just get him in and knowing that all of it's going to fall into place anyway.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Stephen, let me ask you a question that might sound peculiar, but who is John Kennedy? Well, what I mean by that is, what's his profile? Is he an exciting young coach who's worked at every level of football and has now had a dabble of managerial experience? Or is he just the last guy playing pass the parcel?
No, I think he's the first one. Yeah. I think John Kennedy is of huge value to someone, whether that's Celtic or going forward, I don't know. But I think John Kennedy will make a very good career. To talk about what you've just posed there as well, I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is yes, that Celtic could excel with a guy of John Kennedy's profile. But with what all Melly's just said as well, it's impossible for now. It's not indelible. It's not like permanent, but it's for now, it's impossible for him to get the stink of this season off because he's just, that's not going away anytime soon. But on paper, I think he ticks almost every box. Yes, he's not a big name. He's not like a big guy of the European experience and all the other things that people think they want the Celtic coach to have, but really are unrealistic. I think John Kennedy is going to be of huge value to someone. It's maybe part
of the
Scott Brown.
Are we doing the Roy Keane thing though? Sorry to interrupt, because remember we had this conversation before Brendan Rodgers were appointed, and you in particular, not me, but you, and this isn't a criticism of you, but you were like, just give it to Roy Keane. Might as well. Remember we were having that, and then they pull Brendan Rodgers out the bag, and like Melly says, it really depends who's available. We're saying maybe we're just not thinking highly enough, because we know Celtic have spoken to high-level coaches So high-level coaches are obviously interested in coming to Celtic. Yeah. So it's a case of, right, well, John Kennedy's there, but, you know, we can... He's a good guy. He's maybe a level D or C level appointment, but we can get an A or an A+, really.
Yeah, see, to be honest, just a disclaimer here. I wouldn't speak for anyone, but I assume no one here is advocating for John Kennedy to get the job.
Nobody here is advocating for John Kennedy to get the Celtic job. This is a thought experiment and an interesting discussion for a podcast.
I don't know why I have to give these caveats, because everyone knows Twitter is very reasonable.
Mad shouty bastards out there who think that because we got invited to a press conference a couple of months ago as a test event, that we're trying to sell John Kennedy to the Celtic supporters. Now, let me tell you something. If you think we're trying to sell John Kennedy to the Celtic supporters, we've had enough time selling our own Patreon to the Celtic supporters. So we've got no chance of selling a manager. Patreon.com/20minutetims. Plenty of great content on there. Check it out.
1,300 people, get me wrong, but join in. But what I was about to say on the John Kennedy's actual qualities, his tangible qualities, his undeniable CV check marks here. He ticks all these boxes, right? So understands the club. He's been at every level. Why is Scott Brown's experience at the club and knowing what it takes and being able to set the standards, why is that valuable but John Kennedy's isn't?
But
you know what I mean by that, right? I think these different perceptions that fans have are entirely, or not entirely, that's maybe unreasonable, but largely personality-based. So Scott Brown absolutely exudes that leadership, you know, it's busting out of every pore. So people like that see that guy, he sets the standards, he gets it, he knows what it takes to be at a club like Celtic. Whereas they look at John Kennedy, who's a wee bit bland. Having said that, it's coming out of his shell a wee bit in the last couple of days, and I am very much here for it. I've been enjoying that. But they look at John Kennedy, who's a wee bit more measured, and they don't see it. They don't see the value that he probably brings. He has been at every level.
Is it because he's not a brand name? The Celtic fans want...
That's what I'm getting at.
Do they want the brand name manager? Do we want the Supreme hoodie, the Supreme leather jacket, instead for Christmas, or Moz bought a Superdry instead? Is John Kennedy the Superdry jacket? As opposed to, you know, a name brand manager coming in. Is that maybe something to do with it?
I'm not sure if Celtic fans want a name. I think we just want a good coach.
And I suppose you get a name by being a good coach.
Yeah, exactly. I think the days of that big name manager are gone. It's like sort of coaches. And Celtic, we want somebody that's going to work with the players and make them better. I think John Kennedy could work alongside somebody doing that. I'm enjoying this now because I think John Kennedy's enhancing his reputation a wee bit. I hope he can do that in these two games against Rangers, and Celtic fans look at him a bit more fondly because I think he deserves that. This season has tainted his reputation. Looking at it now, it doesn't look like it was all his fault, does it? It looks like he's maybe wanted to make more changes than Neil Lennon was willing to do. So I hope that. I think with the manager thing, it's just one of those things where you want something new, you want something fresh. And the problem with appointing John Kennedy as well is there's been a lot of bad decisions made by the board, and appointing John Kennedy might be a good appointment, but it would look like the cheap one as well. And Celtic have been accused of that far too much with Lennon and not getting rid of Lennon. So I think that's going to go against him as well.
Yeah.
And I think, look, John Kennedy, while he is a good coach in that, Celtic can go out there and get better as well.
I agree with that. I think Celtic can go out and get better. And we're sort of, I think the John Kennedy thing, interesting discussion as it might be, I think it sort of harks back to the just go and get Roy Keane from when we ended up appointing Brendan Rodgers. But you said that, Melly, there's two games at Ibrox, couple of big tests coming up for Roy Keane. Nearly said Roy Keane, there you go. There's a couple of big tests for John Kennedy coming up.
He knows something. He knows something.
What I'm trying to do is sell you the John Kennedy thing, so you hate it so much. So when my pal Desmond appoints Roy Keane, you're doing cartwheels in the street. Thank God it wasn't Kennedy. Look, nothing to fear against Rangers, Stephen. Nothing to fear. I think we're going to batter them.
Nothing to fear but fear itself. Mm. And in this case, that really just comes down to Celtic season, Celtic psychology. There is still that lingering doubt in my mind over the state of this team. Yes, they can play nice stuff. That's undeniable. They can play nice football. Maybe some concerns over their ruthlessness at times, but I can't complain about that. This week, they've just stuck six past Livingston, a rather stodgy Livingston team. They've got players on form. I just worry sometimes that we've played well against Rangers very recently, but just failed to capitalise on it. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's a kind of, Remember we used to talk about the Morelos psychological hurdle, like that barrier he used to have where he couldn't score against Celtic. That's all changed now. He's got that goal. But we used to talk about...
Didn't he score against us, mate? Didn't happen. Let me ask you a question. As far as Rangers winning the league and Morelos scoring against us or not, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a noise?
No, did the Rangers fans? I don't know. It's a weird philosophical debate.
Let me ask you a question. Did you see Morelos score against us? I didn't see it.
Nope.
Don't know what you're talking about, officer.
Despite what I said earlier.
No face, no case. Anyway, carry on.
Right. So we used to talk about that. We used to talk about the psychological barriers and the hurdles and all that. This is just my perception. It's maybe just me, maybe worried too much based on what I've seen this season. I just maybe worry that they've kind of got that fear factor against, not outright fear, but there's just a little bit of uncertainty for some reason when they go up to play against Rangers because they don't seem to be able to capitalise on the dominance, the periods of dominance they've shown.
I feel the opposite. Yeah. I feel that if we are going to lose this game, it's because Rangers are going to just strike it lucky because they've no managed to... We've got the better of them, I think, over the last couple of ties. We've no managed to capitalise. Rangers are probably due another win just the way that the roulette wheel spins on these things a lot of the time. I think it might end up like that, but... I think the opposite to Stephen Melly. I think this Celtic team will be going into this game feeling, you know what, we feel it more like ourselves now. We feel more like us, more like the team that used to get results against Rangers. Obviously, the days of 5-0 and all that, annoyingly, frustratingly, and for reasons I simply can't understand, are long, long gone. But this Celtic team, I think, will be high on confidence going into this game.
Yeah, and I think they should be, rightly so, because I think they've got players playing well and players in the right positions. Just the only thing is James Forrest might make it, might not. That's a bit of a blow. But when Stephen's talking about the psychological thing, I think Celtic can look at this and go, look, first game against Rangers, we had COVID call-offs, just all that sort of thing. But in the other games, we've played well against them, but we've never been pumped off them. We've never took an absolute paste. And there's no reason to think Celtic cannot win this game because we can. We might not, but we can go in there confident, play well. There's no fans there. It's just going to be one of those games where the team that maybe wants it a bit more will get it. And I think Celtic will want this. In the previous games, it's been silly things that have cost Celtic the goals. And we've sort of cut that out recently. We haven't been they've scored four goals against us, all from set pieces. If Celtic can cut that out, they're giving themselves a much better chance of getting, well, you can't get something from this game, it doesn't even go to a replay, but winning this game. If we can shut up shop at set pieces and play what is better than we have done in the last games, because I think Celtic have got another level to go after that, we've definitely got a chance in this game.
Well, another way for me to look at it then, have we reversed it? Are we now the Huns from a couple of years ago, where we're getting closer and getting closer to actually taking a result?
Yeah.
Remember, they were as well. Remember, we were saying at the time, we were like, they're getting closer. The longer this goes on, we're not going to get away with this for as long, because remember, the performances just started getting closer and closer together to the point where they were getting draws, and then all of a sudden they've overtaken us. Are we just there? Are we just a couple of performances away from
still
just switching
the better
it back
team.
Around
I just
again.
Think we were maybe hampered. Emily, you're right. We've got an extra day now for James Forrest to recover. The game was moved on. They postponed the games here, but as far as I remember, I think all the games in England have not been postponed, which is a weird one. And another thing that was weird was we wore black armbands against Livy because DMX died.
I know. I mean, I'm as big a fan as any,
it does get excessive with these black armbands.
Lads, I owe a wee bit of gratitude here. I owe a wee bit of gratitude to old big Philly in the sky now, because on Saturday, I was due to get my vaccine at 4:30, meaning I'd need to leave the game because it kicked off at 4 and miss the last 15 minutes of the first half. A wee stroke of luck, and I get to see the full game on Sunday.
Big Phil in the sky looking down on you, smiling.
If you were a real fan, you'd turn down that vaccine anyway. I don't know what the debate is here. Vaccines are fake, mate.
Aye, how's the 5G coverage in your house since you got that vaccine, Melly? Yeah? Unbelievable. Anyway, look, Prince Philip did die. He died doing what he loved best, dying. And did you see Rangers put all their flags at half-mast? Naturally. They put all their flags at half-mast. Celtic obviously haven't. And then some Rangers fan were up to Celtic Park and took pictures of our flags and then went to Ibrox and took pictures of their flags and went, look at these scum. They hate everything British. They didn't put their flags at half-mast. Honestly, I don't know what goes through their heads. Although I did love, particularly Stephen, the Rangers announcing one day before Prince Philip died that they would not be conducting any social media activity.
Aye. And absolutely
then,
brilliant. And then
because of racism,
later.
And then one day later, They had to.
I love their defence, or rather the fans' defence of this, because we tweeted about it, obviously, and then people are like, oh, you can't read. They said the management and players were going to boycott social media. Oh, congratulations on your partial boycott of social media to fight racism. Your partial boycott. So you're boycotting social media apart from your social media team. Bravo, gentlemen. You've really, struck a blow to the heart.
I'm honestly really pleased to see Rangers as a club and as a supporters and all that take a real stand against racism and discrimination. I'm really pleased to see that, and long may it continue. And if anyone wants to place bets on how long that's going to continue for, I'm not sure it'll last to the end of the season, but we will see.
Week 3 of Rangers fighting against racism. Yeah, that's some record. Fighting racism since March.
Against all forms of discrimination since March 1st, 2021.
Did you see they were tweeting about that balloon through McIntyre bringing his belt home to Ibrox or something as well? All this during their anti-racism stance against... So
that's right, aye.
Martin Luther King, look, Stephen, a solemn tear rolled down his cheek.
Look, Stephen, racism's important, right? It's not as important as WrestleMania. So
very true.
You get your priorities right, mate, okay? Melly, Mo Elianousse, star of the Livingston game. He's the one to hurt the Huns for me. What was your pick of the goals for his exploits against Livingston, though?
Oh, the one from outside the box where it just drops to him in that inside left position. He just bent it round. That's what I think about when I think about Mo Elianousse. You know, I love him. My boy, Moy, I think he's a crack player, and I really hope Celtic can hang on to him. I think he makes things tick up there. And even when he's not completely involved in the game, he's going to get goals. That's 18 for the season when we've not even played well. He's hardly played in his preferred position. I think a good manager could get so much more out of him, and it was great to see him getting a double. And that's another wee mark against John Kennedy. In the previous show, I tipped him to get a hat-trick, and John Kennedy took him off when he'd still had plenty of time to get it. So I was a wee bit disappointed.
Stephen, as you'll see, all of Melly's assessments on Celtic players are made on personal feelings. He likes Moy because he rhymes it with boy, and he doesn't like John Kennedy because he subbed him because he tipped him to get a hat-trick. Is Mo Elianousse the best player on the Celtic team at the moment, Stephen?
Yeah, I would have to say on form, most certainly he is. Although it's a really odd one, Mo Elianousse. I don't fully understand it. We've had the discussion about whether we would all sign him going forward or not, so that's not, probably not worth having again. But I just, for the life of me, I can't understand this. There's still the level of uncertainty there is about Elianousse's contribution out there. Melly's just said he's got 18 goals for this season. Now, one of them is technically from last season because it was in the semi-final against Aberdeen, right? But even if that counts as last season, it still feeds into the greater point that he has been on form for a large part of the season. He scored against Aberdeen around about the same time he'd scored against Milan, and his double against Lille. People, when we tweeted about this as well, we tweeted about, look, that's 18 goals for this season, which is as good as any season Lee Griffiths has had for the last 5 years, and people still talk about his goal-scoring exploits, right? So a lot of people were saying, like, he never turns up in big games. Right, okay, but apart from having scored in the semi-final against Aberdeen, the double against Lille, the late winner against Riga that took us through, having salvaged draws against St Johnstone, Livingston, a hat-trick against Motherwell in a 4-1 win, scoring our only goal against Rangers since 2019... what else has he done?
Apart from all that, what has he contributed to the season?
I realise that people will look at those examples and say, but they're not big games, like St Johnstone and Motherwell. But the point is, if it wasn't for those goals, then we'd be in an awful lot worse position now. Then we'd be struggling to finish second with Morrissey's goals this season. So those are big goals. Those are big results.
He's doing a lot of heavy lifting this season. He's doing a lot of heavy lifting for this team this season. And I really think he's going to be the one to hurt Rangers when we come up against them this weekend. I suppose the big question coming up to the Rangers game is, what more can the SFA do to help them? Obviously, they postponed their ban so all those Rangers players could play in the game. God knows why. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Still, again, they got away with one against Hibs the other day, a perfectly good goal chopped off. From Celtic's point of view, the big question is James Forrest. He's got, as I said, the game's been kicked on, so it gives him another 24 hours to potentially get himself back. He's been good for his melee, hasn't he, since he returned, especially against Livingston? But what do we do if we can't play James Forrest?
Oh, he's a difficult one, because we've seen this season we don't have a replacement for him, a like-for-like replacement. It's something that's really shown up Celtic this season. But I think if he's not going to play, you put in Ryan Christie, and while that's not ideal, it does give Celtic a certain amount of flexibility. If you put Ryan Christie out on the right-hand side in the 4-2-3-1, it can easily switch into the 4-4-2 diamond with Christie sitting beside McGregor, Brown behind them, Turnbull ahead, and then El Yunus, who can join Edouard up front. So it does give us that wee bit of flexibility, but I'd love it for James Forrest to be fit because I think he gives us something different. He's more direct. He's, Stephen spoke about it in the past, how he can, he's a yardage player. He can take us up the pitch, and we don't have any many players that just take on players, and he'll do that. He was sort of building up to fitness in that one. I hope it was just a wee bit of cramp or a wee tweak, because if it's anything to do with the hamstrings, it's unlikely he'll be fit, or he'll even be fit to play the full game. So I think you need a fully fit James Forrest for this one, because we can't afford any passengers.
I'm sorry to be the turd in the punch bowl at the James Forrest welcome home party here, right? But
right now,
James Forrest hopefully will play because he's a really good player, and having him back in the team just provides something we've not had all season. He scored against Livingston just as he scored against Falkirk. Both had an element of luck about them. But what I would say about his goal against Livingston is, yes, he kind of sclaffed it in, but that's what he was trying to do. It's not like it just kind of came off his shin and he went in. He was trying to put it there. He just didn't connect with it particularly well, and it kind of trundled in rather than being placed in. So that's absolutely fine. But what comes to mind here is that James Forrest never turns up against Rangers at all, right? And I don't want to be that arse. Yeah, well, twice or something against Brendan Rodgers.
Get two goals, two winning goals against
but,
him.
I don't want to be that arsehole with the acoustic guitar at the party here, right? But I don't want to bring everyone down.
You're about to play Wonderwall.
But I still remember the absolutely disgraceful performance he put in last season against Rangers. I can't remember the specific game, but he was playing on the right with Jeremy Frimpong, and he disappeared and just left Frimpong out to dry. I know people don't want to hear that because everyone's happy that he's back, but don't get me wrong, I do want him to play against Rangers, but my feelings around it is that he owes us one here. He owes us a big performance against Rangers if available for selection.
It's not as if his replacement, Ryan Christie's got a great record against him either,
Well, he's worse. Yeah, he's worse than Forrest. I know that's why I'm very much in favour or hoping that Forrest plays. I'm just kind of wary about it. Looking at Forrest sideways when it comes to playing against Rangers.
You're right, though. I think when you said he owes us one, you're spot on there. Mm. I just hope he turns up, because I think if the team that sets out in the same manner we set out against Livingston, obviously Rangers are the better team, but that positivity, that enthusiasm, that energy, those same players, I think this Celtic team will still, I know I said this last time, but they will still feel that they've not shown Rangers the true them. And they'll feel, I think, Stephen, the whole team will feel like they owe themselves one. We owe ourselves one against Rangers here. We owe them one. We want to leave one in their chin, and we cannot have them win this double, and we need to beat them at least once this season. There's so much up for grabs here, and the malaise seems to have gone, the dark cloud over the team seems to have gone. John Kennedy seems to be pushing the right buttons at training, whatever they are, whatever he's doing, it's the right thing. So I'm positively, cautiously positive about this game. I don't think we've got anything to fear, but that's not the same as saying we're going to go out and battle them.
No, it's the first time this season I've looked forward to a game against Rangers. Previously, I was like, maybe dreading most of them because I thought we could be ending a real tank in here. I think with this one, if we get beat, it'll be because we just maybe fall a bit short, but I don't think it'll be through lack of effort or lack of ideas. I think Celtic will have a plan for this game, and they'll go into it, and they're going into it on form, which they haven't really had this season at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? See if we're underdogs for this game, good. You know, all the pressure's on them because they're this sort of quasi-undefeated team. I know they have lost a couple of games, but so far, domestically, they're mostly unbeaten apart from the St Mirren game. They're trying to have this air of invincibility at them. Time for Celtic to turn up and pop that balloon.
You're right.
And I'm not talking about Chris Boyd.
No, we do need... Oh, my God. I'm not going to mention the Chris Boyd thing. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm not even going to mention it. It's brain dead. He was just thinking, what's the most contrarian thing I can say?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say any more other than, because if I do, we'll need to explain it.
He'll have seen it.
Yeah, he'll have won. But you're right. There's, again, this narrative of invincibility in this season is ridiculous. There is no shame in this. They just let Rangers make up whatever they want. 150 years. And Rangers are approaching an invincible season. going to at least caveat it by saying the league, because it's not the same. There's a hierarchy here of things you can do. The very top is the invincible treble, right? Presumably it's winning the treble and getting an invincible double, right? Then it's winning the treble and doing invincibility in the league. There's like a hierarchy of the way you can win these trophies. And further down that list is going invincible in the league, but not winning either cup. But they're just calling it Rangers invincible season. Rangers still in the invincible season. It's not an invincible season because you play at least four tournaments in a season, sometimes more. So we need to beat them to kill that chat stone dead,
A lot of people point to Arsenal and say, aye, but they were invincible. They just won the league going undefeated. Yeah, but that happened before Brendan Rodgers' team came along and changed that paradigm. They went undefeated throughout the domestic competitions. The domestic situation was Celtic were undefeated. So
can you at least put an asterisk website, on it? I know, the BBC website even had what the Rangers need to do to beat Brendan Rodgers' invincibles. Win the treble.
They'd already dropped more points.
Just insane. And the press are just shameless here. I just get the feeling that there's a lot of old Blazer boys in this country, very happy about the way things are panning out at the moment. So we need to beat them just to kill that chat stone dead. And on that, we shall wrap up. I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who's joined us on the flagship show. Thank you for all your comments, your retweets. You can support this podcast in a number of ways. You can check us out on patreon.com/20minutetims. We do loads and loads of great content on there, podcasts, videos, live shows. We've got some great stuff on Project Rebuild. We're going to be tracking all the Celtic players during the international tournaments. You can support us on there for as little as about £2.50 a month. Other ways you can support us: tell a pal, leave us a positive review on iTunes or Podcast Addict, retweet the flagship podcast when it comes out. If you don't want to join the Patreon, there's a million things you can do to support us in other ways. Stephen, would you like to say goodbye?
Yes, I would. Goodbye.
Melly, would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye and God bless.
Thank God, Stephen, we avoided one of Melly's terrible, unrehearsed, sprung upon his jokes. And on that bombshell, thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com